results of the October state election are in, and the new office holders have been seated. Not a moment later, the presidential season is in full swing. I'm Cabin Fever, and this is The Weekly. Usually I let this show stick to the interviews, but today I'm going to do a little recap segment all on my own. My treasured co-worker of the public record, James Order, is going to be stepping back from much of his responsibility as a pundit to focus on his judicial career. If you enjoy this show and want to contribute either to it or if you have another project you'd like to pitch at TPR, don't hesitate to reach out so we can have that conversation. But for today, I'll be doing the news. Later, I'll be joined by Governor Sandoval of Dixie, who just today announced his run for president in November.
During the last episode of The Weekly, Order and I broke down our predictions for the October election. Our model showed a high likelihood of a sweeping victory for the left, in which they would capture all four state legislatures and governorships. This would effectively have cleared the way for a rewrite of the Constitution, with the left coalition controlling both chambers of Congress, along with every state in the Union. We expressed our concern with such a nation, one without the check of any effective minority party, unless of course you're counting Senator Valerie, but that's a lot of weight to rest on one set of shoulders. Those predictions were quite wrong. The Libertarians managed a majority in Jefferson and cobbled one together with independent Miguel and Dixie. And incumbent Governor Sandoval fended off a challenge from former Senator Trash to maintain his seat at the helm of Dixie. In an election that many organizations deemed devastating to the Libertarian Party, one that came after a beatdown in the September federal election, they accomplished what they needed to. I don't want to overstate the scope of their victory. The left coalition has more control than the right as of right now. But the right has the ability to play defense, and still has a foothold in the two states that have historically been friendly to them. I'm going to take this segment to quickly walk through what each state government looks like as of now. And then I want to spend just a moment on what broke down on the left to prevent a killing blow against the Libertarians. To start, an area of objective left-wing strength. Puerto Rico is entirely controlled by the United Left. The right wing has zero presence in the state, either elected or as voters, and unless factions develop within the Red Party, it seems that the people of Puerto Rico are at the mercy of the UL agenda. Similarly, the North has returned to social democratic hands, if it ever left them. Ted Dett won a sound victory over Loder for governor, and the SDP took every seat in the House of Delegates, except for the one I personally vacated, which went to former Governor Howard Elkridge after he narrowly beat out Juan Escobar Mendoza. Elkridge will, in all likelihood, be steamrolled by the new cast of SDP members that filled in for the old guard in the House of Delegates. Jefferson is the one and only home of the Global Labor Party, and they managed to flex some muscle in the state, putting Dallas in the governor's mansion and picking up a seat in Parliament. However, the Libertarians pulled off enough close calls to manage a majority consisting of Valerie, Capriz, Kestrel, and newcomer Battle Axes. While the majority is not veto-proof, Dallas put forward April as first secretary today, indicating willingness to work on common ground with the right and accomplish mutual policy goals. Dixie was perhaps the most consequential failure on the left. Governor Sandoval was widely suspected to be a leading presidential candidate before this election, and the left coalition rightly believed that taking him out in October would dampen any chance for his bid for the White House. But not only did the most popular governor of the country maintain his office, the right cobbled together a majority by picking up libertarian-turned-socialist-turned-who-knows-anymore Miguel for their cause. If Miguel sticks with the Libertarians, Dixie provided the block that the right wing needed against further constitutional amendments, and as we learned Friday, Governor Sandoval's presidential bid is alive and well. The left wasted an opportunity. They had more well-known officials with endorsement power to throw around than the right. They had a superior voting base, with the Libertarians accounting for less than a third of the country. And while they held their ground, they did not make the gains that would have been reasonably expected after September. By my untrained eye, this is because of two people, and their names are James Hagan and Omar Sandoval. I understand the desire to put Sandoval down, but the amount of money and face time with politicians lining up behind Trash was wasted on a popular, moderate governor. It brought the former senator close, but without crossing the finish line, it looked like a lot of resources down the drain. The one that I can't quite comprehend is Hagan. Dumping resources against a random Jefferson right-winger might have made sense, since the majority there ended up being so fragile. It would not have taken so much to outdo battle axes in that crowded field and secure a majority in three states, giving the left bloc total control over the country, so long as they could keep the coalition together. But instead, the left opted to ensure that James Hagan lost. A race that was entirely inconsequential, even if he had won. The majority would not have changed. Endorsements piled on the scandal-ridden Viper Darius. And to be clear, he did win, by about 30 points. But it's hard not to wonder what we might have seen if the left wing hadn't decided to prioritize hatred over strategy. We'll see what the next 2 months bring in the States. But already, attention is shifting to the presidential race in November. Just today, Governor Sandoval joined Pullman on the right in running for the highest office, and they're matched with Matthew Hale and Trash duking it out for the right to run from the left. Governor Sandoval joins us next. Now, I do want to apologize, as we are trying out a new audio system for the weekly, and it led to a doubling effect on my voice throughout this interview. We fixed it for future episodes, however, we are not able to edit this one properly, and it was not nearly as clean sounding as I would have liked. So that will be fixed in episodes after this. With that, Governor Sandoval. Governor Sandoval, welcome to the weekly.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to do it. Congratulations on the win.
Thank you. It's a big win for Dixians across our state.
Absolutely. Before we get into the big announcement of the day, can you just kind of talk us through the campaign? Like, obviously, most of the news organizations that kind of watch these elections were calling the race against you. Did you ever have a doubt there? Or were you confident in the race you ran and pretty much knew that it was going to turn out at the end?
I knew that it was going to be a very close race. And going into it, definitely I knew that the left-wing establishment was behind backing Trash. And so, you know, the confidence wasn't too strong, but more so than it seems everyone else, clearly, because everyone thought Trash was going to win. But I'll tell you, my confidence came from my strong first term as governor and releasing some great executive orders and writing some great legislation, which all passed with great majorities. So I think the success there is really what pushed me over the finish line.
You were absolutely, I mean, through our polling, we're able to pretty easily see one of the best liked, if not the best liked, governors in the union. What do you carrying into this second term, or whatever you will have of it, that we did not see in those first 4 months?
Well, within our first 4 months, we dealt heavily with coronavirus, hurricanes. You'll see now we are still dealing with hurricanes. Prior to re-election, I released an executive order to help Jefferson with fighting wildfires. And so a lot of the time we were preoccupied with funding plans and releasing orders that would help immediate emergencies. Mm-hmm. And so going into the second term, I really would like to focus on those things such as healthcare reform and especially tax reform.
Okay. Now, if all goes well, as of this morning, you put out your press release that you are seeking the presidency come November. You only have about a month in office. What is driving you to seek the presidency at this moment, and what are you offering that the other candidates that have declared or not?
Well, I'll tell you what is driving me is the success of my reelection really is pushing me forward. It's telling me that there are people out there who like what I'm saying. That no matter all of the endorsements and the funding that my opponent might have, they believe in my movement. And so I have had so many people reach out to me and you know, push me to make this announcement and run for president. And so last night I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. And really have been putting together a great team, working on a great platform. And so in general, when I'm looking at who the opponents are, I mean, on the libertarian side, you have former Justice Poloman, who I think is a great guy and definitely a character, but I think he's highly intelligent and a nice guy. And then on the left-wing side, we have Matthew China Hawk Hale and former Senator Trash, who I just beat for the second time. And I think that what Americans want is a continuance of stability. They don't want a radical left-wing communist, and they don't want a neocon who is a war hawk and wants to raise taxes in the middle of a recession. I think that I can offer what Americans want.
I'm definitely hearing a lot of confidence here. And back when, in the last presidential cycle, when I was going candidate by candidate, I usually ask this question that I'll pose to you. What do you view as your biggest obstacle to winning the White House next month?
My biggest obstacle, I would say by far, would be an organized left wing, because unfortunately they did very well in the previous federal elections, and luckily in the state elections, our party really pulled together and had some great strategy and held our ground. But going into the federal elections, you're going to see some people with more political weight put their money and endorsement behind the left-wing candidate. And so my goal is to really reach out to that audience. And I do have friends within the SDP, the UL, and Global Labor who I believe I can convince that I am the right leader for our country.
Recently, just before, and I should say, we're recording this about 12:30 on Saturday morning, early Saturday morning.
Yes.
Just, yeah, time zones are hard. just recently, former Senator Trash and your opponent in the most recent election made public, he swears again and again, that he will respect the results of this coalition left-wing primary. You mentioned having the ability to poll Social Democrats and Global Laborists, is the name I think I'm going to go with. If there is a UL candidate, do you believe that you have the ability to poll Global Labor and UL members if that candidate is Matthew Hale or another more traditional liberal candidate in the same vein, not necessarily part of the leftist swing that we're seeing in the last few months?
Absolutely, I think I do. And personally, I do hold more progressive views than some other libertarians, and I think that goes a long way towards attracting other people to support me. And you know, I've spoken publicly about supporting co-ops and not getting entangled in foreign wars and promoting bilateral treaties. I think that these are all things that are attractive to a lot of people on the left. And those are all things that people, that those major opponents on the left, you know, don't believe in. And so there is an interesting relationship between, you know, my views kind of being a bit more moderate, a bit more progressive in a lot of areas, because essentially all I want is to limit government involvement. And obviously, the bulk of my experience has been at the state level, my executive experience. And so federally, that comes into play a little differently when you're dealing with such things as foreign policy and trade and national systems and departments.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned kind of the overarching theme of your presidency would be really minimizing government involvement. We hope that in the next month, the coronavirus vaccine will be well into the distribution process, and hopefully we'll be on our way to coming out of this pandemic time that we've been living in for so many months now.
Absolutely.
As we look to returning to kind of politics as usual, what would you say is the big non-crisis item that you would look to get done in 4 months as president?
My largest non-crisis item would absolutely have to be returning some power to the states. One of the things that I'm looking to do is eliminating some of the executive departments that I don't believe are needed on a federal level, such as some aspects of the transportation department, the energy department, and kind of returning that power back to states to take care of their own roads, their own power plants, and stuff. And obviously, coronavirus is a huge thing, and during my re-election campaign, I promised, and I would hold to the promise that any vaccine will be free to every single person that needs it, wants it, whatever. Every Dixian will get a vaccine for free. And if I won this election, I believe that I would be dealing with that on the federal level. And so my issue there will definitely be working with the states to distribute vaccines and take care of, you could call it, the end game of coronavirus.
All right. While I have you here, any message for our listeners?
Any message for the listeners? I would really have to say that please get involved with my campaign, reach out to me, and really get to know me, see my views. We will have a platform coming out shortly within the next week. And I really hope to get every voter involved in voting this November.
All right, Governor Sandoval, thank you again for your time. Good luck out on the virtual trail.
Thank you so much. It's great being here.
I want to again thank Governor Sandoval for taking the time to join us. I also want to mention from the top that since we have lost James Order, we're very much looking for new contributors. So whether you want to be a part of this podcast or have a totally different project, reach out. We'll have that conversation and help you find a way to be part of the organization. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss any new episodes or the latest news. The Weekly is a public record podcast.